Back when I was in post doing regular conventional doctrine, I just thought everything was genetic and, you know, we don't have control over stuff. We're victims, basically. And, you know, this stuff is just going to happen to us.
Right. It's part of life, part
and
of
that's
aging.
That's the biggest deception in the history of mankind, almost, I'd say. Because we now know, clearly we know now, that Alzheimer's, as Dr. Thomas Lewis a few weeks ago talked with us about, is yet another manifestation or consequence of inflammation in the body. And his main point was you can pick up on this inflammation in the body that's going to the brain that's going to cause dementia and cause you to be a child a second time around. You can pick up on it 10 years before you even have any amount of memory loss when you look in the eyeball and do a retinal exam and see a drusen spot. And that's the very first initial indicator of inflammation in the brain. So if we know inflammation of the brain is the cause of Alzheimer's, and we know it's also the cause of strokes, the ones, you know, that's what'll cause you to sit there with not being able to feed yourself and drool on your face, as you said, that's a stroke. That typically is what's going to cause that to happen. Well, we know clearly stroke is just another end result of inflammation of the blood vessels. Same with heart attack. Same with, you know, all the neurodegenerative. So all these things in Western medicine that are these diseases that are escalating and really skyrocketing in their incidence are all byproducts of inflammation. They're not genetics. It's inflammation. You can have a gene that predisposes you, but you keep that gene turned off. And how do you do that? By keeping your inflammation down.
You know what's crazy to me is if you read your Bible and those Bible stories like Moses and Noah, these guys lived to like 600, 900. That would mean if you're in your 70s, you're just like a toddler.
Yeah.
They really are a child at 70.
Wade.
Oh, okay. Okay, never mind.
Wade, you're getting us off course.
I know.
Way off course.
I'm just saying.
Well, it's hard to imagine that now in this day and age. And I was just in Dallas this weekend, had a presentation there, and I was at the hotel, and my family and I were kind of just walking through and trying real hard. It's so hard not to be judgmental. This is going to sound really bad, but just looking at the fellow guest in the hospital or in the hotel, they're going to be in the hospital. They all just look so different, and I'm not talking about their race or ethnicity. I'm talking about their
body composition.
Their body composition, their complexion, their eyes, I mean, just the life in their eyes, mm-hmm. their mental state, mm-hmm. their vocabulary, just their whole being mm-hmm. was sick, inflamed.
I thought the mm-hmm. same thing, doctor. Friday night, we all had a family dinner at and I won't mention the restaurant, but a local Italian restaurant. A lot of pasta, a lot of things we talk about that are really not good for you to be eating on a regular basis, right? Mm-hmm. And I mentioned to my wife over there, who's a health coach, I said, hey, if you look around this restaurant, the vast majority of the people in that Italian restaurant were severely obese. Now, I'm not talking just like me, a little overweight kind of thing. I'm talking about that they almost need a power chair to get into the restaurant to eat.
Yep.
And I looked at other restaurants we go to that are more health conscious, or that kind of, you don't see that as much.
Yeah.
But you go to certain types of food venues, and you just look around, just look. And then I also notice when I go to the grocery store, as I'm pushing my little cart around and I'm trying to fill it with the good color and greens and vegetables and things like that, I look around, and if I see somebody who's severely overweight, you look into their you can just look into their grocery cart, and you see, hey, Little Debbie's and Twinkies and Coca-Cola and all the, you know, sugary drinks and just loaded to the gills.
Right. There's a lady pushing a luggage cart into the hotel, packed full of Sprite, Coke, and Gatorade on the bottom level. Then stacked on top of that was piles of hot dog buns and hamburger buns and Frito stuff for Frito pies and all these Doritos and chips. And, I mean, she was well over 300 pounds. And I'm not trying to be judgmental. It's just, it was rampant at this hotel. Kids, too. And which is funny, just last week, a study came out. I was reading, well, this was a couple weeks ago, April 24th. This came out in JAMA. The new obesity statistics, 40% of adults over 40 years old are obese, not just overweight. I'm talking, the very large.
Over
obese.
40?
40%.
Over 40.
Over 40 years old in America, 40% of them are obese, the kind of folks we're talking about. 14% of toddlers age 2 to 5. 14% of American toddlers, and 18% of those who are under 17 years old. So, I mean, this is, it's not going to get any better. But the point, I'm going back to the Bible and those folks that lived back then. And when you fill your body with the right nutrients, I mean, you mentioned Juicy Lucy while I go off air, her strawberries that she had for sale on her food truck. I imagine when you cut into that strawberry, I bet it was red.
Oh my gosh,
all the way
so
through.
Good.
They were so tasty, and they were red all the way through. Where I cut one this morning from City Market, the grocery store in Dallas, it was red on the outside, white on the inside, and had zero taste.
Yeah.
And those folks way back in Bible times, they were eating nutritious food, vine ripened. You know, right, like Juicy Lucy's vine ripened strawberries. The reason they taste so good is because they're full of nutrients. They're full of minerals.
Right.
But could you imagine the soil, you know, 1,000 years ago, or 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, the soil would have been so full and just teeming full of life, microbes, minerals. I mean, the food would have been unbelievable. Not to mention all the oxidative stress burdens of our society that we have to battle.
And that makes a big difference, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the text line. It says, question for Dr. Ben. What effect do metal plates / rods and bones have on one's health? I would assume all three of mine are titanium.
Well, potentially nothing. Some folks don't react to these titanium alloys or metals at all, or potentially it could be devastating. I was at a conference a couple years ago, and a patient got up to give a testimonial. She had an allergy response to the titanium they put in her hip when she had a hip fracture. And that allergy response caused her health to completely deteriorate, where she couldn't even get out of bed. And once she figured out that she was having an allergy to that, an allergic response to that metal, and they got it out, then her health returned, and she wrote a book about that experience.
So, and it was titanium?
Yes. So some people will mount an immune reaction, an allergy response to those metals. As far as like the metal leaching, you know, breaking down and leaching into the body and doing something, you know, we talk about amalgam fillings, the mercury in the amalgam leaching out and causing damage, that kind of heavy metal damage, or aluminum that's in the flu shot getting into the brain and causing neurotoxicity. That's different. That's the actual metals getting into the body, settling somewhere in some organ and causing inflammation, where the titanium tends to be pretty stable and doesn't leach and spread into the body. But you can still have an allergy response just to this foreign body that's in you. There's a test called the MELISA. Some doctors are familiar with ELISA, which is a...
how do you spell that?
Should be MELISA, I believe. Or just Google blood test for allergies to metals. I mean, you can test almost anything, like different dental things that are going to be put in your mouth, or anything from a retainer to braces to whatever. The stud for an implant, you can test all these metals to see if you're going to have an allergy response to it. So,
and what would bring on the, like I have four staples. You know, I had a lobectomy when I was a young person, had a carcinoid tumor. They took out the lower left lobe, but then they had to staple the upper left lobe, obviously, or it would collapse all the time because it's an airbag, right? Basically.
Right.
But the four staples they put in my body, now that every time I take a chest x-ray, they show up.
Yeah.
But there's four staples in there that'll be there till the day I die.
Right.
And how would I know that I was having an allergic reaction, perhaps possibly, to staples inside my chest cavity?
probably you wouldn't know unless you were just having some chronic symptoms and you did everything else right in your life. You cleaned up the diet great. You weren't stressed. You hydrated and moved around well. You supplemented well wherever you were deficient and you continue to have significant symptoms. That's when we have to go hunt for other triggers. That could be internal triggers like metal, an allergy to a metal, or oftentimes in our clinic where we start hunting is the mouth. We alluded to with Dr. Levy in his book, The Toxic Tooth, root canals, metal in the mouth, mercury fillings. So sometimes it'll be that driving inflammation. Sometimes it'll be external to the body. It'll be something you're sleeping on, like your mattress. It could have formaldehyde in it, or there could be black mold behind the wall in your bedroom. You don't even know it. So sometimes there's these hidden things that will cause inflammation and therefore symptoms. I usually don't ever even think about staples because the metal is so inert, meaning it's just non-reactive. Same with the titanium in the hip and knee replacements. I typically don't think of that. That would be one of the very last things on the list to think about. But this test,
if you were concerned,
yeah, it has happened. It's rare, but it's happened.
Very rare, okay.
Melisa.org, MELISA.org is the website. You can read all about it, and you can order a test kit and have it drawn, you know, at your doctor's office and mail it off to this lab.
So let me get this straight. That test will show... I'm sure it's a blood draw, and then it'll show, okay, you are having an allergic response
to the metal that's in you.
Really?
Yeah.
That is fascinating.
And they've got testimonials. In fact, I haven't looked on their website in a while, but they've updated it. So they have a symptom checklist you could go through that might give you a clue that you're reacting to the metal. And then there's a number of testimonials, too.
But what does that cost, that test, you know?
I really don't remember. I don't even want to hazard.
But it'd be well worth it if you were a patient, had done all these things, did everything right, crossed every T, dotted every I, and then still having some issues. Yeah. It may be worth taking that test.
Yeah. And my stance on not just this, but almost, because there's a lot of different kind of cool tests that can be drawn that your insurance won't cover, but that can give you some answers on different things you're reacting to that are driving inflammation. I don't know if this is 100% right or not, but it's just our approach is before we go chasing all these potential triggers and all these real expensive tests, we feel like if you steward your body's basic foundational stuff well enough, meaning nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace, that the body can, you've equipped your body well enough to take a hit, meaning it can handle that metal or staple or root canal potentially. Your immune system is so strong, your antioxidant enzymes are so good, you're so remineralized so well, you're sleeping so well, you're supporting your body so well that the hits it's taken from these various triggers, it can handle and not cause symptoms, not cause inflammation.
Will this test show you, even if you don't have that metal in your body, that you would be allergic to it?
Or does it only show it
if it's already in, like, for instance, it's a possibility I could need an implant,
right?
But yet I want to know beforehand, is my body going to react to that?
I know there is a test like that because Dr. Dannenberg here in town does that, a dentist that I've used.
To know before you have to do.
Right.
Yeah, if you stick
like
a
that,
titanium
I'm sure they
implant
address
in there
on their website.
Then
I don't
it
know.
Interacts with
The silver
in your mouth or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's talking about implants right here on their website, the cobalt, chrome, stainless steel, titanium alloy 1, titanium alloy 2, and it lists each metal that's in each one of those. Stents, clips, coils, orthopedic stuff.
Seems like they get, because you know how like allergy doctors will stick you with something to see if you're allergic to that?
Yeah,
foodborne
stuff.
Here it says it right here. Prior to surgery, patients whose clinical history suggests metal allergy may be pre-tested to ensure that they receive the most suitable implant. So there you go.
That's a great idea.
They do that.
That would be well worth your time and money because, man, once it's in, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's a real, once you've done it.
Yeah. So if the lady that texted or gentleman, if they've got an implant already, they could get on melisa.org, MELISA.org, and order a kit, and they can see if they're having an allergy response.
So basically you take your own blood draw and then send it back? Or
so you got to order a kit from this website. Your doctor won't have it, or they won't order it.
I mean, your doctor could sign up. Our clinic is associated with this lab. They could sign up as an associated clinic, but otherwise you just click order test on their website. They'll send it to you. Then you'll have to take it to a phlebotomist somewhere and get them to draw the appropriate amount of blood, put it in the tubes, and ship it off.
And you don't know what the cost is. It just depends on how.
I
guess they determine that on how many different types of things you're testing for.
Yeah, depending on which test. And
a la carte.
I've done this a time or two, but it's been some years ago, and I really don't recall what it was. And the prices may have changed. And again, it's because our focus is more on we don't think we can eliminate every single stressor. I mean, it's impossible. We know we can't. So we don't focus on the stressors. We focus on the terrain. Let's build your terrain up, optimize everything that we know will help keep you healthy and be able to handle some of this stuff. And again, if you do all that and you're still inflamed and you're still symptomatic, then we go hunt for that. But it just turns out it's rare that we have to go hunt for another thing.
Well, and I'm wondering also how much, and again, I know it plays a massive, I guess a massive role is going to be one of genetics, one of hormones, right?
No. I mean, hormones are in all of us, and the hormone system of the body is so complicated. Last week with Morley, I was recalling retinol, which is vitamin A, animal-based form of vitamin A, is needed to make your vitamin D, which is a hormone. Vitamin D is a hormone. So hormone D receptor, the receptor for your vitamin D to even work right, to receive your vitamin D, you've got to have the retinol. But to even make vitamin D, you got to have the mag. And what I'm saying is it's so complicated. There's so many facets to the receptor stability, production and stability and function. There's so many different pieces that have to come in just to make your hormone receptor work right. And then there's so many parts and pieces to produce your hormone. And then you got to transport your hormone. There's things called hormone binding globulins, or sex hormone binding globulin, thyroid hormone binding globulin. These are proteins in the blood that will bind up your hormone and help deliver it around, or just bind it up so much it's not usable. And so my point is, this hormone cascade is just so complex, and so many different things influence it and factor into it and have to be in place. And the feedback loop to shut it down or to ramp it up, and it's just so complicated.
I have a question.
So you can get in there and try to micromanipulate hormones, and you can feel better, but I think there's unintended consequences to it. We focus on that last week with vitamin D. There are lots of unintended consequences of supplementing with that hormone. So you can feel better, but I don't think it's an optimal way to go.
Okay, so family's in town visiting, and one of my sisters is a nurse, and she's all conventional, and she's in her middle 60s, and we were talking about hormones, and she was asking me what I was doing for mine, and she was like, well, you know, it just... you're just meant to not have all those hormones as you age. And so, but I'm like, you know, they're supposed to taper off, and you're not supposed to have the hormones levels that you had when you're younger. Mm-hmm. I didn't say anything, but I'm thinking in my mind, but I'm like, but that's what helps you feel good. And that's you know, it's a, yes, some of, you know, estrogen I know is linked to cancer, but still I don't know. And I was just like, I didn't want to say anything, but I'm just
estrogen
like...
estrogen not balanced by progesterone. I'll add that caveat. When they did that whole Premarin thing and that women's health study came out and, oh, hormones cause cancer, everyone get off hormones. Yeah, for sure. But it's because there was no progesterone to balance it, number one. Number two, it wasn't bioidentical hormone, meaning it was horse estrogen. And that might sound like, eh, no big deal, estrogen's estrogen. Well, it's a little different. And estrogens, all hormones, have a certain shape, kind of like your car key has a certain cut to it, or your front door key, and that key will only fit that keyhole. And same with the hormones, the cut of Premarin or horse estrogen is a little bit different than human estrogen.
But it's not
So it doesn't fit in the receptor.
To try to keep your hormones? Are we supposed to just let them decline as we get older?
Here's my answer. It's fine to do bioidenticals. You will feel better, and you will age more gracefully, and you will... When you have more youthful hormone levels, your body functions at a more youthful state. And pharmacist Jim Hernstner, I think we had him on the show once. I believe we'll have to have him back. He was named Pharmacist of the Year this year. And he's a bioidentical hormone expert. He brought bioidentical hormones into America basically from England in the 80s because his wife had a hysterectomy and crashed and burned from a hormone perspective, and Premarin wasn't helping her, and Primpro wasn't helping her, and birth control pills didn't help her. So he went and learned about these bioidenticals, brought them back to America, and she feels great now, and so do thousands of patients because of Jim and his education that he's brought to a lot of doctors. So there is no doubt, and Jim's lecture that he was here giving my practitioners and I lecture a few weeks ago, and he showed clearly in the literature where the right kind of hormones balance the right way. When I say the right kind, I mean human hormones. Bioidentical just means there are hormones with the exact same shape, molecular structure. They're the exact hormone. Those are called bioidentical. They're the same estrogen, the same progesterone that God originally meant for humans to have, and they're in these plants, and when you apply them to you, they work just like your hormones. As opposed to synthetic hormones like Premarin, they have a different shape, a different cut, they don't fit the keyhole just right, and that leads to all the side effects like blood clots, heart attack, stroke, and cancer. So Jim's literature that he showed clearly, and it was a really cool slide because he just put synthetic hormones on one side, bioidentical hormones on the other, and an arrow up or down. If it decreased or increased cancer, decreased or increased heart attack and stroke, decreased or increased hip fracture and dementia, and the bioidenticals decreased all these things. And the synthetic hormones increased all those things. So if you do the wrong kind of hormone, you're going to have unintended consequences. You do the right kind of hormone, bioidentical hormone done appropriately and balanced the right way, you can feel good and do great. But my question is always, what was God's original intent? And obviously, he intended us, women to go through menopause. And I go back to these cultures where they don't even have a word for hot flash, because these women in these certain cultures don't experience all these symptoms of hormone decline. And it's because they're living a low inflammatory life and diet, like the longevity village in China that Dr. Day wrote his book about. They don't have osteoporosis and heart attack and stroke and dementia and breast cancer, but they're also not on bioidentical hormones, and they went through menopause, but they don't have a word for hot flash. And the point is, they're living a life so pristinely, so low in stress and perfect diet and great sunshine exposure and good sleep and all the basic stuff, that their body just functions for 115 years. They don't drool and get in a nursing home. They don't do all this second child, once a man, twice a baby thing. They don't do that.
Have you watched the documentary, The Magic Pill?
No, I haven't.
You watch that? They show, I think it was an Aborigine tribe. Was it Aborigine, Wade?
Yeah.
I don't know, where these people had been, we brought in food to feed them, and all of a sudden they start getting all of our chronic diseases.
Oh, yeah, that's Weston A. Price in the 1920s, traveled the world to study healthy people. And what he saw was where missionaries, Western missionaries, came into these different people groups around the world and brought their processed grain and sugar. Cavities started coming, arthritis started coming, heart attacks, cancer, all these things came.
It's like the smallpox blankets.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
It's this pro-inflammatory diet and lifestyle.
They had to have camps for these Aborigine tribes to get back to what their ancestors had done and the way
God's original intent. Mm-hmm. You'll live your number of days, and you'll just fall over dead one day. You don't need the nursing home. But in America, we aren't living to God's original intent.
Let's go to the phones, and we got some text to get to as well. Good morning. Welcome into the show.
Hey, how you doing, Wade? I got in late on this conversation, but are you talking about pellet therapy?
We were talking about bioidentical hormones versus synthetics, and pellets are part of the bioidentical hormone therapy, yes.
Yeah,
we didn't mention that.
I tell you, I was low in testosterone. I was just dragging. I just couldn't take it, and I went and got a testosterone check, and I was like at 130, And I've been on pellet therapy now for 5 months. I get my second round this Thursday. And I understand it comes from it's an extract from the yam root or the yam plant.
Yes.
But I tell you what, it's been a life changer for me and my wife. My wife was on Primarin.
Primarin, yeah.
Primarin, and she just got her second one, and we're doing great with it and feel a whole lot better.
Good. Thanks for the feedback.
And I just didn't know if that's what y'all were talking about, but I was going to put a plug in for them. If they're done right, they work.
Yep. Well, thank you.
I was on the shots, but I understand they're real sticky, and they make your blood platelets stick together, and it's synthetic, and this is much better than the shots. So, anyway, good show. I'll keep listening. Y'all have a great day.
Hey, thanks, Butch. Appreciate that. So you prefer the pills over the shots for the male testosterone booster deal, I guess?
Pellets.
I'm for whatever works in that individual.
It could be the shots.
Some folks, shots do real well. Some folks, the pellets do real well. You can't take testosterone orally. The stomach acid breaks it down. But I think his main point is how well he feels when his levels are low. He feels bad when his levels are optimized. He feels better.
Yeah.
And that's going kind of back to Melody's sister's point.
But your point is that back to her, it should, even for a male, we should be around 750.
Yes.
Even in our 70s. Or whatever.
These optimal ranges that if you steward your life right, and I understand we don't live in that world. Not everybody can be at peace and nutrient-dense food and do intermittent exercise and intermittent fasting, which boosts your testosterone level and your growth hormone level too. Dr. Day didn't talk about hormone levels. What he did in China was draw their blood and look for genes.
Okay.
For Alzheimer's and heart attack and stroke and cancer. And he found all the genes, but he didn't find the diseases. And that was his whole point of the book, is genes just sit there. It's your lifestyle that turns the bad genes on or the good genes on, depending on what your lifestyle habits are. But he didn't mention hormones. I'm just guessing. If he would have drawn hormone levels, we would have seen that they were pretty optimal.
Okay, text from Jennifer. She says, I have taken 5 milligrams of Lansoprim for a few years. I'm trying to get off of it. And recently read about a less common side effects, which are essentially an allergic reaction to it. Could Lansoprim be causing the scalloping of my tongue and making it difficult for me to swallow sometimes? I've been a patient of Sigel's for over 2 years, but we just can't figure out my BP issue. Thank you.
So lisinopril, a blood pressure medicine, she's asking, could like an allergy?
Yeah, like scalloping of the tongue.
Okay.
Making it difficult for her to swallow sometimes.
Isn't scalloping usually thyroid?
That is usually thyroid. My general answer to anyone that says, could this drug be causing this symptom? I say, any drug could do anything because it is a foreign chemical agent in your body blocking a certain enzyme. These enzymes have multiple functions. So in your particular physiology and genetic makeup, yes, it could be, but that's not a common side effect of lisinopril. The more common side effect for lisinopril would be swelling, more of the lips. It's called angioedema. A difficulty swallowing, maybe, but it's usually more of an acute allergy response to lisinopril, so I doubt that's what she's dealing with. Scalloping of the tongue does come from tongue swelling, mild tongue swelling, so that the tongue pushes against the teeth, and the teeth are actually causing indentations on the tongue. And you stick your tongue out, and you have these little ridges on the sides where the teeth were pushing in. Typically, that's a hypothyroid symptom. When you don't have enough active thyroid hormone inside your cells, and specifically, I'm saying inside your cell, not necessarily in your blood. Your blood could be normal with your thyroid. You could have hormone in your blood, but it not be in your cell. So that's a distinction we need to make. But when you don't have enough T3, the active hormone inside your cell, that can cause myxedema. Myxedema is this mucousy, watery combination that gets deposited in various places of the body, oftentimes the shins, the upper outer arms, and the face/tongue is also a place. So I would think more about hypothyroidism. But then again, you got to ask, well, why are you low thyroid if that is the reason? Do we just give thyroid hormone in a pill? Or do we go deeper and figure out why isn't your own thyroid working right? And that would be the most optimal thing to do, because whatever's causing the thyroid to not work right probably is impacting these other issues, these other effects, like the blood pressure, like the trouble swallowing. And that's the thing, when you start chasing too many individual symptoms, which I understand you kind of have to do maybe initially, but long term, that is not the best way to steward your health, chasing a symptom. Symptoms are just there to tell us things are out of order. You know, our focus should be what's out of order and how do I get it back into order. And it's almost always going to be the minerals are out of order and the vitamins are out of order. These micronutrients are out of order because we're not consuming them.
Yeah.
Or because we're so stressed, we're depleting them. Or our gut probiotic flora is so poor.
Yeah,
we can't absorb them. And so it gets down to these very, very basic things. And again, I'm this idealist. I think everyone can get back to God's original intent of be at peace and eat nutrient-dense food. And then there's the real world that we live in with our patients and even myself, that we don't necessarily always get down to those God's original intent of perfection. So we got to deal with where we're at. So I want to talk about blood pressure. One thing that was kind of our issue, we haven't been able to get a hold of this blood pressure issue. Nitric oxide is just one molecule that helps dilate blood vessels to keep blood pressure low. Nitric oxide is blocked by inflammation. So we just opened up this whole, you know, box of, it could be a gazillion things now. If inflammation blocks nitric oxide is what keeps your blood pressure normal, then we got to go start hunting what's triggering inflammation. It could be, like we talked at the top of the show, metal from somewhere. It could be something environmental. It could be something still in our gut. It could be a germ that's overgrowing, candida, parasites, limes, all these different critters we deal with. Or it could be the magnesium level and potassium level aren't where they need to be. Those are the two minerals of the parasympathetic nervous system that help calm us down, relax us, dilate your blood vessels, keep your blood pressure low, keep your heart rate low. So it may just be that we need more mag and potassium, or we need less stress because stress depletes your mag and potassium.
So I take that during fasting.
Yeah, it could be a number of things, but I don't think lisinopril, it's not usual for lisinopril to cause scalloping, but anything's possible. So you, to test it, you'd have to get off of it, obviously, and see if those things went away. But when you get off of it, you've got to keep your blood pressure down with something. So
that, what is she like? Trouble swallowing? Hope. Like it feels swollen? She feel like she has something stuck? Because I know forever and ever and ever, I felt like I have like a thing like right where my thyroid sits. That when I swallow, it feels like a pill. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, but if I use clary sage essential oil and I put that over my thyroid every day, that goes away. Mm. As soon as I stop it, it comes back.
Well,
I mean, I don't know what sensation she's having of not, like, yeah, she just physically can't swallow, or?
Well, maybe she'll text in. Lisinopril can give you a chronic cough, and some people it'll even describe it as a tickle in their throat that makes them have this chronic cough. That's a very well-known side effect of lisinopril.
So what does lisinopril do anyway?
It's an ACE inhibitor, so it blocks a particular enzyme in the kidney that helps to keep the blood pressure.
I wasn't familiar with the drug.
Yeah, there's a number of ACE inhibitors, and they're good drugs. They've been around a long time, but they're a drug, so they all have side effects, and I'd highly recommend people listen to my first Tuesday talk from 3 or 4 months ago. When I talk about how do drugs work, and they work by blocking an enzyme or binding a receptor. That's it. Well, these receptors and enzymes have multi-functions throughout the body. Mm-hmm. Like with this ACE inhibitor, it's not just blood pressure that's being inhibited. There's a number of other things that enzyme's going to do in the body, and thus all the potential side effects. On the essential oils, the clary sage on the thyroid, I mean, we think of clary sage more with women and their hormones, helping with kind of mood and hot flash type stuff. But the plants have thousands of phytochemicals. So a drug is one chemical, but in a plant, you're getting thousands of chemicals. And they're natural chemicals put in by God for the benefit of our body. And when you juice vegetables and plants, and you get the watery part, that's called the hydrosol. So the molecules that are water-soluble, they're called hydrosols. You'll get them when you drink a juice, but what you're missing when you juice is all the fat-soluble molecules. And that's what you're getting with oil. So think of these essential oils basically as juicing a plant, but getting the oily part off. What goes in your juicer that you drink in your cup is the watery part. Well, 90% of the chemicals, the good, beneficial phytochemicals, are in the oily part, not the watery part. Your minerals and vitamins can be in the watery part, but all these other thousands of chemicals that have some sort of beneficial function in our body, that's what you're getting in the oil. So I can't tell you why that little thing in your throat sensation went away with clary sage, because there's 1,000 different phytochemicals in clary sage. But it would hopefully encourage the listener to just do some essential oils.
Yeah, they're really good.
They're so beneficial.
They are. I took a lot. I don't do them like daily or anything like she does, but I've used them when I've felt bad or sick. And I'm a firm believer. Like, I'd get nauseated, and of course, Melody would break out some essential oil, rub it on my stomach or chest or whatever, and it'd go away, as opposed to reaching for the Pepto Bismol.
Right.
You know, which, anyways, it worked. I mean, it depends on what you got going on. But, all right, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Stick around right here on You're the Cure. And good morning. Welcome back into You're the Cure right here.
Marriage talk.
Oh, yeah. She was really hammering me about the ketogenic diet.
Really hammering you? Just...
Well, look, I'm a faster. I love to fast. And, you know, we need to get Dr. Fung back on the show, Dr. Edwards, because Dr. Fung, you know, wrote the book on fasting, and I've got the book. I enjoy a weekly 3-day fast. I consume nothing but tea, water, or coffee for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
Yeah.
Usually my first 24 hours is the toughest, and then after that I feel wonderful and I don't even want to eat. Doesn't bother me even to sit down in front of people that are eating,
right?
Which the family does. But then the criticism from my wife, who's a health coach, on my refeed days, which will be Thursday through Sunday, I kind of go a little hog wild. Hey, I did a great thing for half of the week. I'll have a little more pasta than usual.
I did a great thing, so let me just go totally blow it right to smithereens. Well, and my answer in this debate back and forth was basically doing the fasting's awesome for sure.
Yes.
As opposed to not doing anything and just having all feed days every day for the rest of your life and being many of those feed days being standard American. Your risk of Alzheimer's and being in the nursing home and drooling on yourself, your risk of stroke, cancer, cardiovascular, all these things is touching close to 100% if you're going to do nothing but standard American. So if you do all standard American 4 days out of the week and 3 days out of the week you're fasting, how much does that reduce your risk of Alzheimer's, cancer, heart attack, stroke, and all this nursing home stuff? I can't say for sure. You reduced it some. 3 days of fasting is awesome. But the 4 days where you're not and you're going a little more to the leaning towards standard American, you're definitely putting your risk there to a degree. So it's just a gamble. It's like the Russian roulette, you know, one bullet in the chamber versus 3 or 4 bullets in the chamber. I mean, if someone's smoking every day, getting zero movement at all, standard American food going in every day, 7 days a week, they never fast, they're stressed to the max at their job. You know, you just ticked off your top 4 or 5 risk factors. It's guaranteed they're going to have all 4. They're going to have cancer, heart attack, stroke, and dementia.
Yeah, right.
So if they take off smoking, you know, okay, well, maybe that'll cut 2 of those diseases out. But I can't tell you for sure. So it's just a matter of what are you most comfortable with, 1 bullet, 0 bullets, 5 bullets in your revolver when you spin it. And that's a personal choice. I mean, if you want to, you know, make certain lifestyle choices that are more standard American and just live with the potential consequence, but, you know, maybe I won't get it. That's the $1 million question.
But I don't know if people think about like this. Think about, I mean, what's the why behind what you're doing? I mean, you take care of yourself, yes, because you want to feel good, but when you get cancer, Alzheimer's, whatever, who's going to be taking care of you? Mm. You know, it's taking care of yourself.
Just check him into a home.
It's an act of love for your family to take care of yourself. Because people depend on you.
Yes.
And you want to be a good example to your children or coworkers or whoever.
Well, now, let's be fair. She acts, my wife there, acts like that I just eat like
And I'm not perfect by any means.
She acts like I eat like a dog.
I do.
You know, every day
like
on my repeat
well,
day.
Hey, our dogs eat good.
Well, they eat good. They eat, no, we don't feed grain to our dogs anymore. And they,
that's good. So it's the pasta.
We don't give them our leftovers.
It goes to Wade, not the dog.
Oh, anyway.
Sorry. This is getting, like, personal. I don't mean for it to, but...
Well, you're obviously passionate about it. You obviously love your husband.
Oh.
And you see,
sweet.
I think, in your family, you see some of these consequences coming down. I mean, you mentioned you're at touring an assisted living facility this weekend for a family member. So these things are foremost on your mind. And as a mama and a wife, I mean... That nurturing spirit in you, too. I think you want to encourage your husband to be there for whatever reason, even if that's so you won't have to spoon feed him later. But
yeah, I want to go, have fun.
When you...
You'll have fun.
Yeah.
When you know the truth and you fully implement that truth, and, I mean, when it's just in you, then your loved ones that you care about, you want them to know it and implement it too. Now, Wade's got his reasons. We can do a counseling session to figure out what that is. There's probably some comfort involved with these habits, because really they're habits. I used to eat a lot of Reese's peanut butter cups, and it was a great habit if you, for taste-wise, I love those things.
Yeah.
Now, for health-wise, it's a bad habit. But then, you know, there's a book at Costco, Simply Keto. It's a cookbook, recipe book. And she's got her Reese's peanut butter cups in there, mm-hmm. recipe. We made up a batch of those. And I eat three every night. My bad habit reemerged. But it's actually nutritious. It's
right.
full of good fat. It's full of good chocolate. Chocolate's very beneficial for us. Lots of antioxidants
the
in it.
The dark kind.
Lots of minerals in it. And then, of course, you need some sweet to it or it's not going to... It's going to be so bitter you won't want to eat it. But there are some sweeteners in moderation, and they're not going to jack your blood sugar up. They're not going to drive inflammation. They're not going to drive the addiction center. Monk fruit extract, stevia, even the sugar alcohols like erythritol, which is what this lady uses. It can cause some GI distress in large doses, but small doses is a treat here and there. It's no big deal. My point is there's ways to break some of these habits or change them. So the comfort or the enjoyment or whatever, you're not feeling deprived. But oftentimes there's even deeper stuff. We had a patient who just totally associated her eating with her childhood and her grandma and these good times and all this stuff. And it just brought so much happiness to her emotionally, mm-hmm. just so intertwined. And you start talking to her about taking away her Pepsi and her Cheetos. Well, that's taking grandma away and all those memories away. And I want to share those memories with my grandkids, so I need to do that. And there's so much of that involved.
Yeah.
It can be difficult. And I'm not saying your grandma was eating pasta all day, but oftentimes there is some
Greening.
Attachment of some sort besides just... And sometimes it's even... You know, my wife's too nitpicky, and if I give in on this, then she wins again. So sometimes it's more of a relationship
yeah.
issue.
Eating
of
pasta, looking at me.
How is the husband ruling for the benefit of the wife? How's the wife receiving her husband? And it's more of a relational thing. So, I mean, there's...
A chemical reaction in the brain. Your brain lights up on some of that stuff, too.
There's a gazillion and one reasons that we all might want to hang on to old habits, not just Wade.
Back to the text line we go. Jennifer saying, my throat will feel swollen. Back to the Lisinopril comment, I guess.
Okay.
She said, my throat will feel so swollen, so it feels like I have a harder time getting my food down. My thyroid blood work was normal in February, but I'll try to get more potassium in my diet and see if that helps.
Yeah, potassium in the diet, or that is one of those supplements. You can just supplement potassium, and it's fine. But coconut water has a lot of potassium. No salt. People that don't use table salt, which I don't recommend anyone use table salt. Real salt has all the minerals. But no salt, that salt substitute, is potassium. So for this particular case, that'd be an easy way to get in the diet. Cream of tartar that's straight potassium. There's an adrenal cocktail that Morley talks about where you mix real salt, cream of tartar, and some water with vitamin C. So definitely potassium supplementally or through the diet, no salt, that kind of thing. But swelling of the throat, I mean, that could be more allergy. It's just usually that's very dramatic. You take lisinopril and boom, you get this swelling of your lips. It's big, kind of like that movie with Will Smith.
Hitched.
Yeah, I mean, you that's swell awesome up on your lips, movie. Your throat and tongue will swell. It's like I need an EpiPen kind of thing. But it could be possible she's having just a low-grade reaction like that. So, again, the best way to know is just stop it. But your blood pressure is going to go up. So talk with your practitioner about that. They may want to substitute, even just temporarily, give you something for a week, a different blood pressure pill for a week, and see if that swelling goes away and the scalloped tongue goes away, then obviously that was it.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it can't be for sure. You may want to consider that.
Okay. We got anything else, Dr. Edwards, before we wrap up today? Great show once again, but anything else you would like to mention before we let you out of here today?
I don't think so. Just start getting your retinol in. If you don't know what that is, listen to last week's show. And I'm saying that because the sun, the 90-degree weather, the sunshine's coming. People are thinking sunscreen. You don't want that. But retinol helps deal with all the oxidative free radicals that are produced in the skin by the sun. And retinol is found in cod liver oil, beef liver, farm-raised, pasture-raised eggs. So get your retinol in, get your mag in.
Did you see Lucy has eggs?
I like the duck eggs myself.
Yeah.
I think duck eggs have been shown to carry more vitamins and nutrients than regular chicken eggs.
There we go.
So I'm all about duck eggs. They're fantastic, and that's the only place I know to get them.
Yeah.
The duck eggs. Have you had any of the duck eggs yet?
No, I had her quail eggs.
The duck eggs are fantastic.
How are those?
Quail eggs are awesome. I mean,
they're tiny, though.
Dude.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
It's kind of a pain. You got to eat like a lot of them to equal one duck egg, probably. We've got peacocks at the house that are laying. I was wondering about
what?
Well, we've got some African leopard tortoise eggs.
Yeah, I can't do that. Yeah, she laid a bunch of eggs in her little storage thing, and my girls are like, Mom, let's try some tortoise eggs.
They're almost the size of a chicken egg, almost.
Kind of grosses me out, because I think that's like our pet.
You could eat those. We could eat a few of those.
Wait, take one for the team. For your health coach wife here.
Yeah.
Eat one and tell us how it is.
Our dogs eat plenty, and I don't know. They have a few adverse reactions.
Well, the dogs will eat them like they're going out of style. Like, she'll go lay about 10 or 12 of these in a hole, and if I'm not careful, those dogs are digging them up, having a field day.
Wow.
They love them.
Interesting.
Love tortoise eggs.
We'll have to look into that and get the tortoise expert on next show.
Yeah. It's all good. All right, Dr. Edwards, of course, you're the cure. You can check out the website, veritasmedical.com, and check up on some former programs there. We archive them there. Thanks again. Have a wonderful rest of the week, and we'll see you back here next Monday on You're the Cure.